Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Research VR Podcast. Today, we are joined by the legendary VR podcaster, Chris Miranda from Enter VR originally and currently at Vivid Vision.
Hey!
If I'm right.
I don't know about the legendary part, but thanks for having me.
Dude, I'll explain why it's so legendary. And on the other microphone over there, we have Erica Barraza. Did I say that right?
Yes.
Oh, wonderful. From Singularity University.
Hello.
I like it. We have no preparation for this talk because we need no preparation, especially surrounded by experts in their fields and awesome conversations and topics to talk about. And today we're going to talk about this crazy experiment that you did, Chris, about spending 100 hours straight in VR and just kind of talking about, you know, your experiences around it, because I don't think most people knew about or have heard about this awesome experiment happening. And I want to come back to revisit this idea and figure out what happened.
Yeah. So should we start now?
No. I think we got to take it slow, right? We got to take it slow.
Good.
I also have to a special shout out to you, Chris, because the first time I actually like even said anything about VR on air was on your podcast. Like, it was after a conversation we had on the phone. You're like, wait, we should be recording this and like, let's do a podcast. And I got super excited. I was like sitting in my dorm in college, turned on my laptop, got this mic set up. I think I had my my like iPhone earphone mic, which was like scruffing against my beard like this. And we talked about just like really interesting shit. And then a month later, I started Research VR podcast. So thank you for that. That was super cool. Full circle back to the original podcast.
It's awesome. This is probably why I do this. This is good stuff. I'm so happy you guys have gone so far with Research VR. Congratulations.
Thank you, man. Yeah, I try to keep up with it. It's ever since starting to work here at Upload, it's a little bit harder. And Erica and I, we're also doing a little bit on a side project on VR for Good. So I think this is kind of a cross episode of like the science and the interesting social aspects of things combined into one. And I think would be a good starting off point for both. So welcome back.
Yeah, thank you. I know I'm excited. Chris, you and I have had some wild conversations about VR. Probably every one of them deserving a recording of some kind, or maybe some better left unrecorded. But Chris, always enjoy chatting with you. I think it's so important as we also explore the depth of VR for good, all the possible ways and I don't know, potential pitfalls that VR might be led astray. And I love just digging into your mind on all the creative and imaginative ways things can go crazy. Mm-hmm. So that's always fun mental experiments and conversations to have when you're exploring VR for good.
Dude, I'm so excited. This is going to be so much fun.
Yeah.
Erica, yeah, I can't wait. This rabbit hole is worth going into.
I told you, no need for preparation because this is all your bread and jam. I feel like every time I see you at a conference, we just like dive into this. We literally just dive into this insane subjects for like 20 minutes just standing up in the middle, like having lunch on one side and like a coffee on the other. And then you're like yelling. And then people around us start walking around us and like start eavesdropping in. Like, what the hell are these guys talking about? And then it all ends. It's like, all right, I'll see you next conference. Bye.
Just so you know, I make it my goal to make sure that every conversation you and I have is a little bit uncomfortable to you.
You told me that before.
I think that's healthy for anyone, though.
Because it's easy to get caught up in circle jerks, right?
Yeah.
So it's good to like have like conversations that like, you know, will make you be like, oh, God, wow, what just happened?
Yeah.
This dude is fucking crazy.
Came out of left field.
I think that's your specialization, Chris, let's be honest.
It's funny because it's one of those things where, like, I want to, it's like a roller coaster ride. I want to keep you on edge, like, holy shit, he's going to throw it off the rails this time. But no, I just keep it right on the edge where you think I'm going to, like, say something worse than I've ever said before. But no, like, I keep it, it's nice. I like to have the suspense, like...
Oh, that's why he's on the show, guys. Enter VR is, I think, really interesting project. I've been really into podcasts since like 10 years ago. And so when I was getting into VR, I wanted to see what was out there. And I think yours was the first that I found and went through just a ton of episodes. So I feel like I've gotten to know you a little bit more than you think I know you. And then I think that's the nature of podcasters is like it's a one-way conversation, but like it's a really intimate on the receiving end, because someone's speaking into your ears for like hours on end. So you feel like you know them, but you kind of really don't.
I downplay that. I tell myself, because I think I might be like mentally ill or something, because I think I might be like too narcissistic. So I consciously tell myself, all right, no one's listening to this podcast. No one gives a shit. And that makes me a little bit more fearless.
Yeah.
Because I'm like, no one gives a fit. No one gives a fuck. No one's listening. All right. But I'm sure there are people. I look at my SoundCloud statistics. I know there are people. I'm not ignoring you. If you're out there, I know you're out there. But I'm going to pretend you're not, so I can actually speak my mind.
It's an interesting way to manage your own celebrity, isn't it?
Yeah. It's weird. Celebrity is not a... It's a weird... Definitely a weird one. Definitely a weird one.
Yeah.
I mean, I think we're in the age of this, like, micro-celebrities where, like... Not that you're not a cool celebrity or anything, but it's... We sometimes don't know our own following, because especially being like, you know, on the VR public end of things, we're constantly out in public, like on the internet public. And there are actually like people that follow this very closely. And I was one of them. Like, that's how I got into this business. It's just by reading and listening and kind of following people a ton. Yeah. So shout out to all our fans.
Yeah, shout out to everyone who's stepping up into VR to try to make something with their lives. I feel like it was you and Kent Bai that first came on the Enter VR podcast.
Oh,
and
cool!
You guys went off and did your own podcast. And to see that be able to like contribute just a little bit means a lot to me. Like, yeah. It means so much. I've actually been struggling, and sorry to go off on a bit of a tangent, but I'm going to need you guys' advice on something.
All right.
I've been struggling with the following dilemma. Should I get a hammock or a dry erase board for Christmas for myself? Now, let me tell you why the dry erase board.
Okay.
I realized.
Please.
So I know the hammock seems like, yeah, that's a no-brainer. Why the fuck would you want to get a dry erase board? But I realized that my best thoughts are in the shower.
Yes.
And I need to write them down.
Yes.
And I've been thinking to myself, like, I need to put a dry erase board right there on that shower. Yes. So that I make sure. Because I'm like, I'm in the shower. Wait. And I think to myself, dude, am I a fucking genius? Holy shit. These thoughts are amazing.
Shower thoughts.
And then I get out of the shower and then they're gone.
Okay. First, let's start with the premise. You're in the shower and you need a dry erase board.
Would that not work?
Yeah, I think the dry is critical. But, I mean, there's also the mirror, right?
True.
You could scribble with your finger on the foggy mirror. It's a nice romantic note to yourself.
That's true.
You know, or even
no, that'll go away, though. That foggy writing doesn't stay.
Well, listen, it's going to last longer than his thoughts, apparently, to get from the shower to a notebook.
Yeah.
Or even just like if you've got a mirror bedroom. I use mirrors.
Yeah. To write
on with the dry erase markers.
Mm-hmm.
So I mean, you know, hammock, stocking stuffer for dry erase markers. It's a win-win. And then just find yourself a nice happy mirror.
But you have the ability to get that shower thought and hold the shower thought all the way from the point that you're done with your shower to the point where you're in the mirror. I don't have that, you know, luxury.
Okay. There are notebooks that you can take out into the field with waterproof paper.
Holy shit.
I think that's what you need.
Yes, actually. My girlfriend
Science to the rescue.
Mm-hmm.
Science.
Thank you.
Oh, they have pencils. You have pencils you can write with on this waterproof paper that you can put up on your wall or in the shower. It's pretty cool.
Get yourself a nice NASA pen.
You know, here's what I've been doing.
Mm-hmm.
I got an iPhone 7 that's waterproof, and now I have everything in the shower.
Really?
Yeah, it's kind of cool. I just like bring it in with me. Usually I like to keep showers just like completely disconnected, which is nice to have those shower thoughts. But sometimes you're watching a YouTube video and you just want to keep watching it as you're going into the shower. So today I watched Colbert Report I watched that in the shower. It was pretty great.
Wow. Yeah.
And then you can also type if you want to. I mean,
wow. Yeah.
Take that, NSA. Eat your heart out.
Shower thoughts are real, though. I think there's the science, or at least this is me BSing a little bit, but I think there's some merit to it. You know, that state right before you're asleep, when you've put your head down, the first like 20 minutes, you're just like almost in and out of hallucination, but you also have those amazing thoughts. You're like, oh my God, I just solved all of my problems. Mm-hmm. Like, I think that's actually the same state, and it's called like alpha waves that your brain goes into. It's just like the slower, more relaxed state that I'm pretty sure the shower also induces, which is why we have those really free thinking stage when you're just kind of exploring ideas and you really feel like you come to some interesting conclusions. And you do. You really do.
Yeah. If someone ever came up to me and said, Chris, here's $50 million, go start an accelerator. Mm-hmm. I would make sure that this accelerator space, every desk was a standing desk and it was underneath the shower. Yeah. It'd be glorious. We would be the epicenter of the world's greatest technological innovations because of the amount of, you know, human potential we unleash with this shower thought mechanism. You know, it'd be amazing.
VR, forget
it. There's like, something there, I swear, but I don't know what it is. What is it about the shower that makes me so smart?
You know, I think it's the fact that, like, you're literally, well, with the exception of Oz taking his phone in, I think it's that moment of clarity, right? You've got one task. Maybe.
And
it's, you're focused. Your brain is somewhat uncluttered in the shower.
And that thing you've just done many, many times, your brain has gone very efficient at doing it. So you don't need much cognitive load to do the showering. So it leaves so much empty room for other thinking, right? You're taking this long, to actually do the showering, and then this much cognitive load is just open for you to use. Mm-hmm. That's my interpretation, at least.
Yeah, well, it's the same as like when you go through like your whole morning routine, brush mm-hmm. your teeth, get the shower, make your tea or your coffee and everything. And before you know it, you're like 20 minutes in, and you're like, I don't even remember what I just did.
Yep.
Or like, you know, it happens also sometimes in scary ways when you're driving home and those last few minutes, mm-hmm. like you're just like, you don't even remember. You're on autopilot and it's just operating completely different levels of your brain.
Yeah.
It sucks when those moments happen and you realize that you've locked yourself out of your apartment. That's happened to me twice in the last 6 months. A lot of shit has been going down and I just don't have time to think about like a lot of things. So I go into autopilot and it's twice it's happened to me.
That's
and
nuts.
The apartment building where I live, they will charge me $50 to come unlock the door for me, which is ridiculous.
Do you use those little tokens for the door or do you use like real keys?
Real keys.
I know.
I've heard there are some apartments here in the city that the ones that they use the tokens, they'll charge $100 to
Holy
replace that for
fuck.
You.
Holy fuck.
Really?
But you know, those places are
You could get
money.
The Bluetooth lock thingy, but I don't trust those honestly at all. Like we're so early in the IoT stage for you to trust like your entire home security down to a $50 Kickstarter thing that don't do it.
What do you have to lose? Think about it though. I mean, no.
Expensive PCs and VR headsets.
Who though has
insurance got that?
Maybe.
Does insurance cover like someone?
If you've got renter's insurance, ladies and gentlemen, please, I implore you.
You're
renter's
such an adult.
Insurance.
Yeah. You know all these things about renting. That's true.
Yeah.
Well, let's get to our main topic. I think this has been something I've been wanting to just know more about. And I've just been like bugging you on Twitter, just like, do a write up or like tell me more. Like, seriously, it was so interesting. I was watching you during the live stream just from here. Just, I remember seeing one scene where I was, I guess you were like 50 or 60 hours in, sitting on a chair with a Vive, and then you had a towel around the foam because I guess the foam itself gets really annoying after like 3 hours. And you were going to go to the bathroom, and then you like close your eyes, took the Vive off, and immediately put on the gear, and then turned it on, went into the pass-through mode, and then walked to the bathroom, and then came back. And you like made a sandwich along the way. I was like, wow, this guy is taking it seriously. So what was your process like? I mean, in terms of...
So I'm going to be upfront and say that this experiment, this marathon thing, although I said that I did go 100 hours inside of a VR headset, mm-hmm. there were 3 to 4 seconds in which I had this muscle reflex and I took it off and I saw the world and I was like, fuck, no. So it was
just muscle.
100, it was like this weird muscle memory where like, you know, you just take off the headset.
Yeah.
Just take off the headset. So that happened twice. That happened a couple times, and another time I had to talk to my lawyer because I got arrested because of virtual reality. I'm not going to go into that.
You told me about that.
Whoa, but, that is such a tease.
It is a tease, isn't it? But, you know, this is the nature of...
we'll revisit when the legal paperwork clears.
Yeah. And
last time you told me you got arrested for wearing like a furry costume or something and what hours you were driving.
It's a crazy fucking story. It's a crazy story. But the story is not as badass as I make it sound like it is. Like, holy shit, you got arrested for virtual reality. No, it's not that badass. But going back to the 100-hour thing, yeah, I went, you know, 99.999% of my time inside of VR and a VR headset. And the thinking behind it was when I first started the Enter VR podcast, I would like ask all these people, you know, at some point, and here's the thing, you know, with regards to writing a blog, I've actually struggled with that. By the way, yeah, I've been trying to write it, you know, for the past months, and I sit down to write and I say to myself, ask myself, how the fuck am I going to be able to put this experience into words? You know, cause it was a week of more than half of a week of my life where I was not in the world. I was just somewhere else.
Yeah.
And it was crazy. But, why it was because when I first started the podcast, I would ask the smartest people I could find the question, like, hey, what would happen after prolonged use? Mm. And developers, scientists, doctors, entrepreneurs, VCs would all come back answering the same thing, which was, I don't know. Mm-hmm. And I realized that, well, here's an opportunity for me to figure this out. Not only that, but the drive came from a little bit of altruism because I was like, holy shit, you know, there's billions of dollars these companies are putting into this and, you know, we don't really know what would happen. And then a little bit of my drive came from ego because I was like, well, holy shit, I'll be the first dude. Yeah, this is going to be, you know, it's going to be great. You know, it's going to be, I'm going to be the first guy to be 100 hours. Great. Dig measuring contest. That's awesome. And then the other part was sort of, imposter syndrome. It's a big thing in Silicon Valley where like, you know, you're surrounded by some of the most brilliant human beings that have ever lived in one of the most competitive places that have ever existed. And you ask yourself sometimes like, well, what the fuck am I doing here? What am I doing here? How do I belong here? And so you get this imposter syndrome where you're like, you know, you have to go the extra mile to prove yourself that you belong somewhere. And so I had a little bit of that going into the 100-hour project. I was like, you know what? I'm not just a podcaster, but I do shit, you know. And boy, did I do shit. I mean, the symptoms and the things that I felt coming back were definitely real, definitely real.
So I guess before we jump into like the effects at the end, what were your expectations going into it, and what varied when you're like, holy shit, this is actually better or worse than I thought?
So I studied this a little bit. I looked at, and part of my preparation included looking at what others had done before. There was this guy in Germany, and Sarah Lisa Vogel, shout out to Sarah, she's fucking awesome. I think she helped him out with that project. He went 48 hours. And what was interesting about that particular scenario or that particular experiment was that the guy at 26 hours was asleep, woke up, and then freaked the fuck out. Just complete freak out. You know, and
was that the guy in the bunny suit?
Yeah, the pink bunny suit. That was him. And he had a complete freak out. Sarah had to come over on cam on the live stream and sort of had to like calm him down. You know, and who knows what had really happened. I think what he said on the Vice interview, on the interview, was that, you know, he had woken up and he had forgotten maybe that his mind had forgotten that he was in virtual reality. And there was this weird disconnect, you know.
Yeah.
Anyway, that freaked me out. So I was like, well, I don't want to end up like that guy. Okay. So that was one of the things that I was looking into, like, how am I going to not freak out after going to sleep? You know, how am I going to deal with that psychologically? How am I going to deal with the eye strain of staring at a blue light for 100 hours? How am I going to go poop? How am I going to go pee? How am I going to sleep with it on? And all those things, I went into it without having done a single trial run. I was, you know, at Because here's the thing, I had borrowed a Titan X from my friend James uh-huh. Baja, and you know, at that point I was like, and I had gotten this free Vive from Unity, so I was like, well, fuck it, this is it, you know. And here's the thing, I had asked people, I've reached out to like scientists, mm-hmm. like Ghazali Lab included, about collaborating, seeing if we can work together on this, seeing if there's
case anything. Study, yeah.
And I got, you know, pretty much deaf ears. I think, and I kind of understand that, like, you know, you're some random guy, you're going to go 100 hours and I'm going to put my name on the line,
yeah,
you know,
exactly.
my profession on the line for you. So I understood that, and I realized that I might as well just do it on my own. You know, no one's mm-hmm. going to. And if anything, what it ended up proving was that A, you can do it, and B, you don't die.
That's good.
And so if I ever do it again, which I am going to, then I'll help be able to prove to, you know, the scientists and the researchers, like, look, I've done this before. Mm-hmm. It's going to be fine, but I need more data. I need to find out what is going on inside the human mind to a more granular level. And the equipment is out there. You know, the biofeedback and the mm-hmm. brain imaging equipment is out there. Mm-hmm. And that's the ultimate goal for this project, to go 100, maybe 200 hours, push or stress test the limits of the wetware.
Yeah.
And figure out if there's anything there. And if there isn't, then great. You know, then we get green light and we all go into the matrix happily. But if there isn't, yeah. There is something there that we should be concerned about, then at least we get to catch it somewhat early. Because things are accelerating so fast. It's so crazy. But
I mean, these displays in the headsets, I mean, they're made from phones. Literally, that's mm-hmm. just a phone display that they just retrofitted into the headset. And like, as far as I've seen, I still haven't seen anyone, you know, really looking at the effects of what it's like to have that in front of your eyes for so long. They're meant to be viewed at, you know, at a half a meter distance from you rather than, you know, near eye display. So I don't know. There's really interesting effects there. And you're right. I think even the blue light, especially when you're trying to go to sleep, probably not the best. What environment were you in when you're trying to go? Do you have a Vive on?
Or? So yeah, I used the Vive and I was primarily going through every top rated experience on the Steam VR platform 6 months ago. And then I ended up playing a lot of really good games. One of my favorites was Vanishing Realms because have you ever played The Legend of Zelda? Mm-hmm. And then you played The Legend of Zelda and then 3 years ago when VR first, you know, when this new next wave of VR started coming around, you would ask yourself like, wow, imagine Zelda in VR. Mm-hmm. Well, I didn't have to imagine that because I play Vanishing Realms and it was basically that. It was fucking awesome. I was basically Link from The Legend of Zelda, slaying dragons, shooting orcs in their face with arrows. It was great.
That's cool.
And I spent 12 hours doing that on my first day. And I was like, all right, well, that's basically it. All right, I can go to sleep. You know, I slayed dragons for 8 hours. The next day, in the next few days, it was hover junkers. One of the things that I was cognizant of was taking advantage of room scale. I wanted to make sure that my body was in motion, as tiring as it became, because I remember playing four or five hours of straight up hover junkers with Gunter S. Thompson. And it was nice. It was fucking great, but I remember at the end, I was like, I think I might have done around 350 squats.
Nice, dude, that's solid.
In 5 hours, I might have done this. Like, it's just because you're taking cover, you're going up and down.
Yeah.
I exaggerated, definitely not 350 squats, but in that ballpark, it was so many. And I didn't feel it because I was so hyped up, you know, shooting people in the face.
Now you can actually track those things, like how far you've moved in the Vive, how many times you've rotated and like moved in XYZ. I think it's called Advanced Open VR Settings for the Vive. Like, just adds it in. It's pretty cool.
So they are turning the Vive into a little bit of a Fitbit because it has the accelerometers and everything.
It's not official from them. It's like someone just made a plugin that like gives you more options in the Vive.
That's fucking cool.
And it helps. You can rotate the play space. You can do things to it.
Yeah,
it's pretty amazing.
That's fucking cool. So one thing that I found that was really interesting was the social VR spaces were very much, I looked at it, sort of from an anthropological perspective. Mm-hmm. Like it was, you can definitely have a sense of how different the cultures are that are being nurtured in these spaces. Huh. Completely different cultures. Huh. You know, you go from VR chat to alt space to high fidelity. The culture, the way people talk, the way people interact, it sort of goes to show how much of our world and how much of our actions are like engineered through our environments. Mm-hmm. You know, that's like, I was like, wow, this is crazy. And it's just, it's, I think that's a taste of what's to come. But yeah, throughout the experiment.
I want to freeze on that, actually. Yeah. That's a really interesting point about just the culture. And I guess you can even look at, like, you know, Instagram culture versus Facebook culture and Snapchat culture. And that's the internet cultures that we've, and like Reddit culture, right? And then that to the nth degree in VR, essentially, when you, it is a real interaction. And I wonder how that will develop into, you know, many different distinct cultures that you see, you know, like how you behave in Rec Room versus how you behave in alt space, and how that actually changes you. That's really interesting.
No, it definitely is.
What did you see in terms of generally different things?
Generally speaking, everyone's nice. That's for sure. Mm-hmm. But it seemed to me like people in VR chat were a little weirder. Mm-hmm. And it was like a good weird, kind of like a good weird nerd. Like because here's the thing. These are people who are making their own Unity environments and putting them in VR chat. And they're like, and they're using their own custom avatars. Like, it's more involved. They take mm-hmm. more ownership of it, I think. Whereas alt space, the world's already there, and you get there, and it's all about, you know, more. I feel like it's more about talking to people. Whereas in VR chat, it's a little bit more about exploring and checking out the different creative ways people are making rooms and spaces. But yeah, there's definitely seems like there's The creators, the developers are trying to foster two different cultures and you can see them in real time when you go from one to the other, you know, back and forth. Yeah, but it's subtle. And most of it, you know, you'll just come away realizing that everyone in VR is just nice.
They are. And unlike other multiplayer kind of like things on Xbox where people are just, you know, telling that they're going to teabag you and do this to your mother, but...
Yeah, it gets intense. I've been playing a little bit of Overwatch lately, and I've been getting verbally abused in Overwatch. Like, come on. I play D.Va. D.Va, come on. You suck, dude. You suck. I'm like, seriously, guys, it's just a game.
Yeah. I've been playing some Onward, which is like the Call of Duty for VR on the Vive. And like, it's a really tough game because there's all these things on your body that I used to pick up, and there's like no instructions for the game. And so like, you know, you have one death and then you have one life and you die. But if the people are so nice that you're like, sorry, guys, I'm a noob. I have no idea how to play. They're like, oh, cool. Come with me. Like literally they like come next to you and then they show you, they like point to things in your body and like grab it with that trigger. Cause you can do that. Like you can, you know, literally touch their body and like point to things and help each other do it. Especially even on the control, you can point to their hand, be like, click that button. You know, you can't really do that before with like XYZ. It's cool. But at least for now, it's going to be really nice communities. Hopefully, you know, as adoption grows and anonymity grows as well, comes trolling. And
you guys bring up some interesting points because, you know, myself, I'm not a gamer. I mean, I have my Game Boy and I've played Zelda and a little bit of Pokemon and Tetris. My God, so much Tetris. But one of the things is like, I'm not playing these regular kinds of games. And I'm wondering how jarring do you think that the shift in these kinds of communities will be for, let's just say, for women or just even non-gamers in general, right? Because I've no experience in the kind of worlds that you're describing in. But I am really active in Instagram and Facebook and Snapchat and Reddit. And I, you know, you learn to get accustomed, right? Like in Reddit, learned like rule one, no one must know you're female, you know, and Snapchat, you know, I feel fairly safe because it's all my friends. And Instagram, you know, like so much food and flowers is like my running theme and all my VR pics and stuff. And then Facebook, I try to keep some semblance of privacy and like leave my professional life, you know, a little bit inside, but more personal, right? So I've set up specific boundaries for each culture, for each part of the internet where we're visiting. How much autonomy do you think these different social VR groups or spaces are allowing for either personal definition. It sounds like some people have a lot, like a deeply personal investment in building out some places, and others are visiting essentially someone else's space. How do you think that people who've never had experiences with these kinds of environments might struggle or thrive in there?
Yeah, it's a tough question. I think, you know, and I think it's going to come down to the individual. I think people are going to, you know, people are going to visit a place like VRChat and be inundated by all the environments that you can go into, and they can either, they might walk away feeling inspired, wanting to join and try to contribute, or they'll be intimidated and they'll be like, holy fuck, you know, this isn't for me. Or something in between. And it's hard to say, frankly, but, you know, I think there's something there.
I think in terms of like the real culture of like how you'll interact and how much information of you you'll put out in each app will be determined when your actual friends are also part of those communities. And that really determines how you're going to, you know, show your identity. Cause you can be anonymous, you know, in whatever app, and you can make up whatever username and go as that. Sometimes I like to do that and be, you know, German in whenever I'm in VR and be like really funny German, but then, and then real Germans come on the show and then,
and then like, dude, the hell.
But it's, I mean, it's fun to play as a different person. I think that's, I think that's one of the appeals of it. So this is early times, and it's cool to see that, you know, there's at least some kind of anthropological experimentation happening. Tell us a little bit more about, you know, your second day or third day.
Yeah, no, it, feeling. It, I mean, and sort of the piggyback on the anthropological experimentation, I feel like we can even go further. You know, we could, you know, I've been thinking lately about, and this is one of these things where like, it's a running theme with me where like, I'll think like, man, I should make this experience. But now we can pretty much create an experience where from the get-go, you tell the user, this experience is going to offend you. We're going to do everything we can in this experience to offend you. And you can get imaginative. But again, it's another way of sort of pushing the envelope of what is creatively possible and showing people a version of VR that is more real to sort of this human spectrum of imagination. But back to the second day, I think... So I went to sleep that night, and I realized that I didn't have any issues. And I also realized that I didn't have any dreams. I was going in there expecting to have like crazy dreams, because that was one of the things that I was seeing on the Reddits. People would go on the subreddits and say, hey, guys, are you guys getting wild, crazy dreams? And you'd be like, yeah. And then it just becomes a giant affirmation circle. And so that first night I was a little bit disappointed, because I was like, oh, fuck, I guess the hype isn't real. But I went to sleep with the headset on and inside of the Valve, the lab from Valve. And they have a solar system room in there. So I went to sleep in the solar system. And what I did was I would go to sleep facing away from the sun. And in the morning, I would turn over and I would look at the sun, and that would be my sunrise, quote unquote.
Right? So that's so romantic.
Try to trick my brain romantically to sort of realize that there's daylight, or that there's sort of a pattern to waking up and going to sleep. So that was my method of going to sleep. And to eat, I would heat up Hot Pockets and microwavable burritos and anything that I could eat with my hands and just put in the microwave, and then I would eat it with a pass-through camera. That was my method. It was effective. It was effective. Then you use Gear VR to use the bathroom. I recorded myself
peeing in a cup.
Using
you should have peed in a cup, man.
I should have peed in a cup in front of everyone. I mean, honestly. It's a brave new world, but then
so I just want to make sure I've got the logic. That's because there was no cables, right?
No, yeah,
environment.
Next time it's gonna be in a room where the toilet's gonna be right there. You're gonna see me doing it right in front of you.
You'll have that nice 6x6 prison cell.
Yep. It's gonna be sponsored, brought to you by the Department of Justice,
of correctional institutions.
Department of Corrections.
Yeah.
They're always looking for
sponsored
money.
By private prison industry.
I think that's a whole other podcast right there. Is VR in prisons? Question mark.
And here's the thing. I think there's a silver lining to it. Mm-hmm. I honestly think that there could be rehabilitative and actually good things that can come out of that, you know. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a chance that we might brainwash people, turn these places into brainwashing, re-education camps. There's a possibility that could happen, right? You know, but I don't want to shut my mind out completely from the possibility of, you know, using this as a tool of education for people who are in jail.
Yeah.
But yeah, back to
peeing here.
Back to peeing. So 100 hours I peed with the headset on and I filmed myself taking a shower with it on.
You showered?
Yeah, I showered with the Gear VR on. I took one shower though. It was only one shower.
Okay, yeah.
Because it was not easy.
Really public service.
But I didn't wash my hair. I was just one thing that I should note, that the whole experiment was gross. The whole thing was gross. The whole thing. I was just looking back at it. I'm like laughing.
Your headset straps are just like full of grease now.
And here's the worst thing about it is that, remember how I told you I didn't think through the whole like wearing the headset, you know, for 100 hours? I didn't get an extra
foam pad.
Piece.
Oh.
Yeah. So I wore the same foam for 100 hours straight after sweating,
after hover junkers,
sleeping, farting in it. I did everything in it. The hover junkers, audio shield. I mean, Hollow Point was the biggest workout by far. If you play Hollow Point, you quit your gym membership. Just get fucking Hollow Point. And you'll be like, I mean, I was sweating, just dripping sweat. You know, but it was gross. It was gross because then I had realized that was a lot of fun. That was so much fun. Oh shit! I have 76 hours more to go in this. I can't take it off. And so what I did was, what did I do? I MacGyvered something. I MacGyvered. I think I have
a towel or something.
Well, the towel. Here's the thing. The Vive engineers did not think through the fact that someone would go 100 hours in VR. Like, they just didn't see that coming. Because
I bet the Oculus ones,
The Oculus ones didn't put a passer camera in the thing, so I couldn't use it. That was a big reason why. People are, like, asking me, like, why didn't you use the Oculus? Why didn't you use the Rift? And it's so much easier to troubleshoot a headset when you can turn on the pass-through camera and I can see my keyboard.
Because it is more comfortable. That's interesting. Well, at least in my opinion, the Rift is more comfortable.
Fuck yes. By far. No doubt. It's comfortable, lighter, but doesn't have pass-through camera. And it didn't have touch controllers at the time. So, and room scale, I would have taken room scale over having to sit down for 100 hours or to stand. So then... So where was I? I should just get to the dreaming. The dreaming looking insane.
Dude, yeah. What night did you have these dreams?
The second, third, and fourth night, I remember having these insane, vivid dreams, the likes of which I've never had and never had had since. And it was really interesting because the subtext of the dreams were me escaping or me running away from certain situations. And I have this theory that my subconscious was trying to tell me, Chris, just run away, take off the headset. It's fine. Just take it off. You know, just trying to tell me through my dreams.
Those sound like stress dreams, actually.
You know what I was doing? I was in one of my dreams. I was a madman. I had become a Don Draper type. Wow. And I was in the top of this building and like shit had just gotten too stressful. So I had to run away from the office. And I ran away from the office and I like climbed the top of this construction site, this building. And I just went up to the top and just to reflect and smoke weed. That was it. But it was so vivid. It was and it was emotional too. Like I think I was crying in the dream and I think I was crying in real life. Like it was like it was what I like to think is that the brain knows when it's in VR, when it's in reality and when it's dreaming. And in that state, those dreams, it felt like I was somewhere in between all three. Like, it was just different. It was just different. I've never felt anything like that.
Do you think there was a difference between knowing that you were in VR versus knowing you were in a dream? Or was your brain maybe panicking because it felt like it was in a dream for too long?
Yeah. It could have been that. It could have been exactly that.
I wonder, you know, what would be an interesting experiment is to see, you know, if there have been any coma patients who would have similar reactions or have a similar gosh, no, I'm not sure how to phrase it, but like, you know, if some of them are semi-conscious or at least subconsciously aware when they're in their coma, or if something gets triggered that if they spend a significant enough amount of time that their brains might react and pulling some kind of deep-seated PTSD from the time that they were out. That just has my imagination rolling right now.
Yeah, that would be insane.
As far as we know, when it comes to dreaming, it's mostly about your brain trying to store. I think there's a better word for it. Store the memories that it's formed, and especially the learning part of things, right? Like you learn certain things throughout your day, and sleeping is how it gets transferred into long term. And it's a lot of that comes with like physical movement. If you've learned like if you start learning the cello or piano or something, you start dreaming about certain things about that because your brain is like such a new skill for it to start learning, which is primarily why people have those VR dreams in the beginning, right? They're like, brain has not ever experienced this. And then especially when it's a room scale and walking around and moving hands kind of in experience, your brain really starts to work on overtime trying to understand how that physics of that world even works. But I have no idea what it would do after, you know, being in it literally 24/7 and the dreams that you have after that. I mean, I'm guessing it's trying to consolidate those memories, but then there's the anxiety and stress aspect of things where you are not comfortable throughout your entire day. Like, I'm sure you're comfortable to a certain degree, but there's a lot of fiddling and things they have to do. So that's fascinating. I mean, I'd love to ask like a memory researcher about that.
Yeah, the whole experience was really, I mean, and here's the thing about my mind adapted to being in VR fairly quickly.
Really?
Like it might have to do with the fact that I've been in the paying attention or working in VR for so long and, you know, using VR for so much that it's just second nature to me. But yeah, it was really easy for my brain to click into like, all right, I'm in VR and sort of be okay with the resolution and with being okay with the screen door effect, being okay with the extra lighting being okay with the field of view. Mm-hmm. And it sort of just like that became normal to me. And, you know, what you bring up about the dreaming, and I am undeniably optimistic about VR, and there's one reason why. Here's the one reason. Regardless, and here's the thing, you know, there's this movement of people who want to make VR, and I'm all for it. I want to make VR more empathetic, want to make VR more conscious, want to use VR to give people the ability to critically think about the world and certain subjects. Like, I'm all for that, right? But if that movement fails, I'm still going to be a bit optimistic about VR, because here's why. And I've discovered it thanks to the 100 hours, and just prove it to me even more. I think that the human brain, for most people on planet Earth, and James Blaha says as well, he's like, you know, around the age of 10, you know, your brain sort of decides, all right, these are the patterns, rules, and regulations of this reality that I'm in. And basically, this is what I have to deal with for the rest of my life. I don't have to work around. I don't have to fuss with the physics. I don't have to think up of new models or of my reality. And what happens is that if the brain can be seen sort of as a muscle, right? And when you don't exercise a particular muscle, it just atrophies, right? Mm-hmm. I think that what VR can do is that all of a sudden those patterns and sort of and models of the world that were like stuck, mm-hmm. where they were for you for your whole life, all of a sudden they're being stimulated. Mm-hmm. They're being challenged. And, you know, I think, I don't know if VR is going to make people smarter, but I think that the access to more experience will undoubtedly rewire the brain in one way or the other.
Absolutely.
And I think, and I hope, I mean, is that, you know, this will cure the problem of small-mindedness. I think it's just human beings. It's easy for us to get stuck in a small-minded sort of pattern because it's just an easy route. We're efficient animals. I think we're always looking for efficiency. You know, it's not that we're lazy, it's that we like efficiency, which is like, mm-hmm. less work for more, you know. And I think that can backfire. And that's where VR can come in, because then, you know, you have access to, you know, insane experiences. And then your brain becomes that muscle that you start exercising. Mm-hmm. Or not. Or not. You know,
or we're just sitting here just BSing.
Yeah.
Well, you know, one of the questions that brings up is something that I hear all the time, you know, especially since, you know, the whole month of November just kind of imploded on us here in the Valley, where we have a lot of folks who are questioning, you know, their echo chambers, the bubbles that they live in, and and the power of technology. And a lot of people saying that, you know, how do we redistribute that power? How do we create groups that are going to kind of create almost like an ethics board or morals board? And the question I always have is, well, whose ethics, whose morals, whose beliefs? How do you account for that, right? And one of the things that I'm inspired by and also a bit skeptical of is the OpenAI. Right. Like this whole movement of all of these AI experts coming together, making this attempt to set some ethical boundaries and limitations on what can or should be explored or experimented or implemented with AI. Do you think that we need something similar, or who would we even begin to assemble for some kind of ethics board for VR? Because when we talk about rewiring the brain and we talk about opening up people's minds, you know, and we made the joke earlier about, you know, the prison system as well. But really, when we make those examples, I think about, you know, Clockwork Orange and, you know, that scene where they just keep his eyes open and he's watching all of these things, and you're completely changing a human being by rewiring their brain. How do we tackle that?
Well, let's talk a little bit about rewiring the brain, because this is how VR, 100 hours in VR, rewired mine.
Perfect.
And then we can talk about that particular fork in the road. So I think... you know, and here's the thing. So I take off the headset, and by the way, the whole experience was pretty fucking bizarre and surreal. There was like 150 people watching, and I went into someone in VR chat had made a the Magic Kingdom in virtual reality. So from the Disney's Magic Kingdom, and they have this fireworks show every night at Disneyland. They have this fireworks show where like Tinkerbell will come down flying, and then they'll play the music and the fireworks. So to close off my night, the last thing that I did was people from VRChat invited me to this room to come watch the fireworks with them as I, you know, the moment before I took off the headset. So cute. It was this really cute, really like almost, I was like, for a second I thought to myself, like, wow, am I in a movie? Like, this is, this feels
nice,
like a movie.
Fairy tale ending.
Yeah, right? It had this very fairy tale ending sort of until I took it off, right? Oh. And so I took off the headset, and immediately what I hadn't realized was how sharp and vivid the world looked, and how this felt like nothing I've ever felt before. And it almost felt like I was on some sort of high. Like, I've had friends who that they've tried LSD, and they based on what they've told me, you know, this experience almost felt like, you know, if you sort of round it off, like doing a quarter hit of acid, like this sort of, you know, had that sort of like
a microdose.
Emotional, yeah, even higher than the microdose, frankly, like a little higher than that.
What's that,
but it had this euphoria, because all of a sudden I can see the world with my own eyes, and my brain had gotten used to seeing the resolution of the Vive. And that change went from like going from 32K, you know, resolution in my normal eyes to like 2.5K and getting used to that, and then going back to 32K, that was insane. And all of a sudden my brain was seeing patterns and shapes and angles in reality that I had never noticed before.
Interesting. Wait, tell me more about that.
So you know how when we look at the visual cortex, right? Like you got V1, V2, V3. At V1, V2, those levels,
your brain feature detectors, only,
it's just patterns, right? It's lines and patterns and, you know, shades, right? That part felt like got activated a little more. And I would look around, I was looking around my house, and I was like, why am I looking at that sharp corner more? Why am I looking at that edge more? Why is it that my brain is paying, I know I'm paying attention to it more than I used to, and I don't know why. And so that was really bizarre.
I wonder if the corners and edges just are not as defined with 2.5K.
It could be.
Right? Or just not as visually acute for those neurons to be activated. And that's like firing back. Like, oh my God, I can see these lines that I've never seen in the past 100 hours.
It could be that. Yeah, it could be the brain was like, holy shit, this is novel again. I'm noticing this because it's novel again. I used to ignore it before. But so that was super interesting. And then obviously... the screen door had been burnt into my retina. That was, so the screen door is that mesh. And what ended up happening was that mesh, I had it embedded in my eyesight everywhere it looked.
Wow.
No, actually I didn't.
Hmm.
I only had embedded that much of the screen door effect at a 90 to 100 degree field of view. So if I looked in my periphery, it went away. So the screen door effect only burned into my retina at the field of view of the Vive.
And
it was crazy. I was like, holy shit, I could, like, there's this weird line, cutoff line where I can see the screen door effect and then I don't. Out of my periphery, it was super trippy.
So it's almost like a real-time comparison of what the field of view of your real life was to where your Vive was. And like, wow, that's such a small little window of, you can see the pixels still. Like, that's nuts.
It was insane. And it had me questioning reality for 3 days. Because I was fuck, I didn't take off the headset. Did I really take off the headset? I think I did.
Like, seriously?
I mean, for like, there was a couple times. And mind you, I was stoned. So that doesn't count, I guess.
Wait, were you stoned during or after?
After.
No time during?
So here's the thing.
Audio Shield.
Yeah. So if you play Audio Shield on a few hits of marijuana.
Mm-hmm.
It is watching neuroplasticity happen in real time.
Really?
Here's what
interesting you say that.
Yeah. All right. I'm gonna spill the beans, okay? Because no one listens to this anyway. So no, might as well tell you. All right. So this is what happens. We know that cannabis activates neuroplasticity. We know this, right? And so what I had done was I played Audio Shield sober for a few hours, and then I played Audio Shield with a little bit of weed. And what I had noticed was that when I played Audio Shield sober, the beat, the rhythm, you know, I would block it with the shield sort of like a two beats away. And I would sort of be at that edge of like, all right, just barely keeping up. But then with cannabis in my system, what I had started happening was it went from me being able to see two beats ahead to four, five, six. And next thing you know it, I felt like I could turn off my brain, or there was a click or like a switch that would go off in my brain. And next thing you know it, I was blocking the beats that was coming from Audio Shield at four, five, six beats ahead of me without me thinking. And every time I would, like, my voice inside of my head would activate, but say something, like, I would lose it for a second.
Mm.
But it was this weird state where I was like, holy shit, I feel it, I'm in it. And I can watch it in real time because I'm training my brain with Audio Shield, which I've never had before. Like, I've never had that sort of, like, you know. And here's the best part about it is, like, you're playing a game with the music that you like. So, and it's hyper-visual. And it's also, like, you have to move your body a little bit, right? So it has all this,
and it's stressful.
It has that, right? It has that suspense of trying to get a high score. So it has all these elements that activate all these parts of the brain that I think could be amazing for, like, you know, people who live at hospitals and stuck in hospital beds, or just you know, really good arcade experience in general. So there we go. Screen door effect gets burned in my retina. Patterns and shapes. Also, the two last things that happened was when I went to sleep that night, there was this crazy buzzing inside my eyes.
Buzzing?
Yeah, like I was
artifacts.
Like I felt like there was bees, like a beehive inside of my eyeballs. Huh. And it lasted like 6 hours. It was just, it just felt this buzzing zzzz, the whole for like 6 hours before, you know, while I was trying to go to sleep. I think it just had to been with, like, you know, had to do with my brain or my eyes just being like, holy shit, this is what it feels like after, you know, that much noise.
Sound.
It's almost like, I could perceive sound through my eyes. It was just weird, like my eyes were just overcharged with light or something.
From having a headset off for a day, you know, that much more visual information is coming in, and it's like, it's so tired, I'm guessing.
Yeah.
God, that's nuts.
2 weeks later, I noticed that also houses and objects that were far away in the distance, my mind was looking out to them more. And every time I did notice them, it felt like I was looking at houses, you know, that were out in the distance, and it felt like they were, You ever seen the tilt shift effect of a camera?
Yeah.
It felt like that. Like I was looking through a tilt shift effect, a very minor tilt shift effect. And it wasn't like, it wasn't scary. It was just really novel. And it lasted 2 weeks.
So as in it looked far, but it's in your mind, it's like, oh, that's actually smaller and more like a playful, like a dollhouse.
Yeah. Like a Sims. And it had this weird three dimensionality to it. Like as if parallax was, like my parallax and depth perception were a little bit off.
Yeah.
I want to put the theory on the fact that the Vive's screen was set at a fixed focal point.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So my guess is that it has to do with that
and your lens
time.
And the lens in your eyes aren't accommodating.
Yeah.
So when you take it off, it's like the lenses are like fixed at that one infinity point, and everything else when you take it off it starts moving. It's like, holy shit, what is this thing in front of me?
I actually, our chief optometrist, I did a call with him right after the next morning. He wanted to check my eyes, see how they're doing, and thankfully you know, the eyes are really good at accommodating and just not being able to come back.
That's so cool. I think doing this 100 hours now is a different going to be different than doing it in 2 years or 3 years with the amount of tech that's going to change between the headsets. But I think that's so interesting to document, you know, at this point, state in time, what VR is and how it can affect you.
Last thing, I'll leave you guys with the last thing. The last thing that it did was it left me wanting, it left me with a little bit of a better outlook on the world. I think it had antidepressive effects. I feel like, what I'm basing this off of is that ketamine treatments are used to fight depression, and how the ketamine works is it's sort of this disassociative that breaks the cycle, the loop, you know, that people in depressive states get stuck in. I think what VR, that 100 hours in VR, if I was stuck in a rut, it definitely took me out of it. And it definitely was able to break whatever loops I had going on. I walked feeling like a little bit more appreciative of real life.
Yeah.
It almost felt like, you know what it feels like? You ever go on a vacation and you come back home and you're like, ah, it's nice to be back.
Mm-hmm.
That people should feel that more often. People should feel that more often about reality, period.
Because I like that. Yeah.
Existence is finite so far. Thus far.
But more on that brain science later.
Yeah.
Welcome back home then. This is awesome. I mean, that's a really cool way to end it, I think. The rejuvenation back into the real world helps you realize the insane complexity that our brain actually processes. So
this opens it up for mental health, honestly. Like if people, I don't put it past this reality, considering all the crazy fucked up shit that's happening, or crazy shit in general that has happened, that one day we will see places, institutions where people will go in VR for a week or two and by them, you know, being monitored by professionals, and then they will come out and come back better, happier, maybe.
Opens up the question. Thank you, Chris Miranda and Erica Barraza, for again joining us for this awesome episode of Research VR. It's been a fascinating subject. I'd actually love to revisit this and actually go into the deep depths of, you know, what happens to your visual system in VR rather than outside. So that, and then you also talked about, we'll come back to talk about it. Anyway.
So much. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you all for being here.
Thank you guys.
And join us for next time. Bye.